welcome to the Grand Cast, season number 4, episode number 4. Today is Friday, October the 27th, 2017. On the cusp of Halloween.
The cusp. I like that.
It's a good word.
The cusp.
My guest this evening, Mike Logan.
Hey, it's me.
Thanks for being here tonight, Mike.
Thanks for having me in your spooky apartment building.
it's nice. Like
no, in month. Here is nice. Well, like even when I knocked on the door, it was like boom, boom, boom,
reverberation.
I was waiting for like to hear like a child feet scamper behind me. That's a little creepy.
Yeah, the spookiness is appropriate for 1 month of the year. So
this is true.
I like to start out each episode going over the mission statement and goals for the show. So the mission statement is that the purpose of the Grand Cast is to explore the comedy scene in Grand Rapids, Michigan, as it exists in 2017 through a series of conversations. And then I have two goals for the show. The first being to post one new episode weekly, which I have been fucking up royally, but I will hopefully get two out in the next 2 days. Ahead of GRIFF, Grand Rapids Improv Festival, which starts on Monday and goes until the following Monday.
It's a week long?
8 days of fantastic improvisational comedy with troops from all over the United States.
That is a long festival.
Yeah, I'm very excited for it. I got an all-access pass.
Should I answer this phone call from an unknown number?
Sure.
This is probably a mistake. Hello?
You can speakerphone it if it's something exciting. Press 1 for what? Or press 2 for what?
Let's press 1. And that was a waste of time. All right. Continue.
Grand Rapids Improv Festival.
GRIFF.
Yeah, every night there's different events. Wednesday is a fantastic lineup at the Pyramid Scheme. Even though this episode is coming out way after GRIFF, I'm still going to talk about it because I'm so excited for it. Hopefully, once this is out, in hindsight, my expectations will have
fulfilled. Let's just pretend like it already happened. Man, did you guys go to GRIFF?
Oh, it's so good this year.
It was so much fun. When Louis C.K. dropped in and just did improv for no reason. Oh, man, it was crazy.
I'm so glad I bought that t-shirt, too. Only $15.
How cool was it that Wayne Brady showed up? Oh, my God. The whole original cast of Whose Line was at that one place. Ugh.
Did you see the upcoming Whose Line show at DeVos Hall?
And is that real or is this part of this fantasy?
DeVos
still?
Place. Oh, this is real.
No, I
got an email about it.
Is DeVos it real? Like legit?
Yeah. And it says like the current cast of Whose Line, but it's only Ryan Stiles and I forget the guy's name. Jeff something.
Not like, Colin Mochrie.
Not Colin
the two
Mochrie,
best people on that show.
Not Wayne Brady.
Oh, I'm not going to go to that.
Right?
How do you have Ryan Stiles without Colin Mochrie? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. How can they call it? Who's lying?
Ah. Maybe, I don't know, I haven't watched it this season. Maybe it's there's a different
no.
cast? No, it's not?
No, same
all right.
cast.
Well, then we're full of shit.
Still great. Great to watch on the TV.
Yeah, still
I'm a fan. And the second goal of the show is to make at least two people's day better through the creation of quality content. I did bump that up to three people's day better last week, but I am worried about not fulfilling that goal, so I'm dropping it back down to 2.
Oh my God.
I don't want to set the bar too high for myself. A lot of fear of failure.
Sure.
Yeah.
2? Really?
Yeah.
I mean, you got
it your, was 1.
Well, your page has what, 64 likes or something like that?
I don't know.
So that's at least, there's got to be at least 64 people who listen to this.
Yeah, Josh does most of the social media stuff.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure your page has, I know it has over 60 likes.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not good at analytics or metrics because this is just like a podcast for me to listen to. Like, I don't care what anyone else thinks about it or listens to it.
I think that's the best way. That's how I approach comedy, usually. Yeah. I think that's the best way to enjoy what you're doing is to do it for yourself first.
Yeah. I drive a lot for work, and I didn't have enough podcasts to listen to, so I had to make my own.
Dude, 93 likes.
Hey, almost 93. Triple digits.
I guarantee I can get at least 20 people to listen to this.
Hey, great.
At least. That's a guarantee. We've heard it here first.
You heard it here first. Let's get into the interview portion of the show. Mike, what is your favorite color?
Oh, jeez. I don't think I have a favorite color.
No?
I tried to pretend like I had one when I was in elementary school, because that's like a common kid question.
Yeah.
It was blue back then. Okay. And as I got older, I'm like, I don't give a shit. Like, I was just like, I don't think I have one. I know I wear blue a lot. And gray. Like I'm Batman or some shit.
Hey.
Like my heart. But no, I don't think I really have a favorite color.
All right. That's the first time anyone's ever had that answer. If you had to be transformed into an animal, which type of animal would you choose to be?
Cheetah.
Cheetah.
Without question. Those things are, they're intimidating. They're super fast. But they're only fast when they need to be fast. They're not one of those animals who have wasted energy. Like everyone always talks about, cheetahs have a top speed of 75 miles per hour, but it's only when they're hunting food. Like they don't ever run that fast, like just to go from one place to another. Like they're just like, I gotta get some food. And then it's like, hey, come over here and mate with me. It's like, I'm gonna take my time. So I like that. I like that they choose when to use their awesome power. Huh. With great power
comes
Uncle Ben being dead. That's
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Oh. There's a book called Thinking Fast and Slow. I haven't read it, and I don't really know what it's about, but I know it exists.
Thinking Fast and Slow? What's it about?
I don't know. Contradictions? I think it's from like a venture capitalist or an entrepreneur, like how to come up with business ideas or something. I don't really know. Someone recommended it to me, and it sounded interesting. I'll have to look more into that. But running fast and walking slow reminded me of the title.
Yeah. The cheetah wrote that book. Cheetah, someone gave a pen and they're like, hey, read a book.
Is that a superhero? The cheetah?
The cheetah?
Yeah.
I don't think so. Hmm. Not that I know of, at least.
We should trademark. You heard it here.
The cheetah?
First, yep.
It's a pretty good superhero name, I feel like.
Yeah.
My ability is to run 75 miles per hour for only 15 seconds at a time. Like, he's pretty useless, but for that 15 seconds, he's amazing. I'd enter Olympics. That's what I would do. If I was a cheetah and I could only run 75 miles an hour for 15 seconds, I would only enter 100-meter dashes, and I'd make a killing. I'd be on Wheaties boxes.
What is your earliest memory of experiencing comedy?
That's a good question. My earliest memory... comedy in any form, right?
Mm-hmm.
It would be watching Caddyshack with my dad when I was a wee little lad. My dad loved stupid oddball comedies, and Caddyshack is like the epitome of like stupid oddball comedies.
Oh yeah.
And my dad would always he'd always talk to me like Bill Murray in that movie. So like I grew up just talking like this all the time for no reason. Kentucky bluegrass, it's a great kind of grass. It's a blend. It's a Kentucky blend is what it is. But that would probably be my first experience enjoying comedy was watching Caddyshack. And my second experience with comedy would be my mom making me watch The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, starring Dolly Parton and Burt Reynolds. Not a movie you want to watch with your kids, but she did. She was a weird one.
I don't know if I've ever seen that one.
It's not good.
No?
No, it's terrible.
Oh.
It's really bad. she loved it, though. I remember the song, what's that song, the Whitney Houston one, the Whitney Houston did that she made famous? What is that song called? It's the Dolly Parton original. Whitney Houston remade it. I Will Always Love You. That song is from that movie, The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Huh.
Dolly Parton did it for that movie, and then obviously Whitney Houston redid it for The Bodyguard.
The only Dolly Parton song I could ever possibly name is
Nine to Five.
Yeah. And I don't even know if that's a cover or an original.
It's her original. It's from the movie 9 to 5.
Oh?
Yeah.
She's been in
a lot of movies.
Huh.
She got really big being in movies, actually, before or after her bluegrass career.
Huh. I haven't really explored that facet of American culture before.
Oh, my mom, she's from Kentucky, so she's a really big country music fan. Well, her family is. She's from Michigan. I've been to Dollywood in Tennessee. Like, that's how I can tell you almost everything about Dolly Parton, unfortunately.
Huh.
We won't tonight. I won't.
That's a whole different podcast.
That'd be a great podcast, just a black guy talking about Dolly Parton for an hour. This is garbage.
Review each of her movies in detail. As people do podcasts where they watch the same movie every day for a year, or they analyze like 1 minute of a film every day in like extreme detail.
Well, 1 minute?
Like they'll watch 1 minute and they'll rewatch it and go through like each aspect of that minute of the film.
Oh my God, that's ridiculous. Who has that much time?
I don't know.
Jesus.
An hour a day? Every day?
I mean, I guess that's not that bad, but if you spend an hour analyzing 1 minute, after two minutes, I'd be like, I'm done. I've already watched this twice. I don't need to watch it again.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting experimental podcasting stuff going on.
I was going to start a podcast, and then I felt like it's just so oversaturated now to the point where it's like everybody has, like, it's pretty easy to start a podcast, but like, it's hard to differentiate your podcast from anything else.
Yes.
And so I'm just like, everyone, there's nothing more cliche than a comedian with a podcast. Every week it's like, I'm starting a new podcast. And everyone's like, good for you. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's not good. You're just filling more garbage. Nobody cares about some comedian from the Midwest opinion about anything, really.
I guess it depends on the format of the show.
If I had a compelling format, I would totally be down for it. Like, I had an idea for a podcast. It was gonna be a movie podcast called Before and After Reviews. And it was me and I'd go see a movie with a comedian, and we'd review the movie before seeing it, and then we'd watch it and then review the movie again after seeing it. Which I feel like maybe a decent podcast. I just haven't pulled the trigger on it yet, and now I've put the idea out there for someone else to take. So now I got to do it before next week.
It could be like an analysis of nostalgia, like how you remember movies from your childhood versus how they actually
rewatching movies. Oh, like, you know what movie I was going to watch the other day? I saw on Netflix, the Howie Mandel one from like the 80s. What's it called? About monsters with Fred Savage.
Oh, Howie Mandel is in that? Or
he's like the main monster.
Oh.
Yeah, like, because like, there's a world under the kid's bed, remember?
Yeah.
And there's a monster with the two horns.
It was super
spooky.
Was
Howie Mandel.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
What was that movie called?
I couldn't tell
Whatever.
You.
Doesn't matter. But anyway, I was going to watch it again just to see if it holds up. I did that with Space Jam last year, and it does not hold up.
Oh.
It is not a great movie.
Huh.
Nostalgia's purposes, yes, it's a great movie. I loved it when I was a kid. But as a film buff, I'm just like, this is a poorly shot movie, poorly conceptualized, animation is pretty crude, the acting is terrible, the plot makes no sense, Danny DeVito was wasted. so all my opinions about it now. Bill Murray's in it.
I just rewatched The Jerk recently.
That's a good movie.
It was a good movie, but my nostalgia filter got rid of all the product placement that was in the movie. That's something that really bothers me in movies.
Product placement? How do you feel about Wayne's World, how they did it?
I haven't watched that in a long time, so I don't remember there being any product placement.
There's like a whole scene where like they talk about how product placement is bad, and they just do product placement while talking about it. Like, it's like Wayne says, like, it's like, oh, think about this, is giving me a headache. And then like Garth walks up and he's like, take two of these. It's like two Tylenol, and he's like, little, round, different. And then it cuts to one of my favorite scenes in comedy, where it's just Wayne sitting at a table completely covered in Reebok gear. And he just says, I can't stand people sell out things just for money. It's pathetic. Like, that's fucking genius.
One of my favorite lines, possibly the most favorite of all time, is also from Wayne's World, when they're filing the paperwork and he says that he has to remember to cross his T's and dot his lowercase J's. Just the delivery was so on point.
I think Dana Carvey is criminally underrated for playing Garth. He is so good in those movies. I like to play.
There's a new documentary on Hulu about his series show.
Yeah, the Dana Carvey show.
Yeah.
That had like Steve Carell, Stephen Colbert, Louis C.K., and Dana Carvey, but still somehow failed. What was it called? Too Big to Fail or something like that?
I don't know. I don't have Hulu.
Oh, I'm almost going to watch it. It's in my queue. Do they still call them queues? I know Netflix, they're called lists now.
Huh.
Well, they used to be called
queues. They get rid of the queues?
Yeah, they're called lists.
Huh.
Then they tried to get rid of the thumbs up and turn them into hearts or whatever.
What?
But that didn't work. People really were against that.
I don't know how I feel about thumbs up, thumbs down.
I think thumbs up, it's too black and white. It's like the whole like Rotten Tomatoes thing. Whereas like, that's a way different thing to talk about Rotten Tomatoes. But the thumbs up, thumbs down is just...
stand them.
You know, here's my thing about Rotten Tomatoes. I could look at Rotten Tomatoes scores and be subjective. Like, I understand that critics have different views than users.
Yeah.
Like, I understand that. Like, a critic sees a movie completely differently than the average Joe sees it. I just don't think Rotten Tomatoes is a good barometer because people look at that and they think, oh, this movie has 13% on Rotten Tomatoes. It must be terrible. But then you read a reviewer who gave it a rotten score and they're like, oh, this movie was really good except for this one thing. And then it's got a rotten score because of it.
They're owned by Comcast.
Yeah.
NBC Universal of Universal Studios fame and Warner Brothers or Time Warner, which owns Warner Brothers. So two major movie studios own this movie review website that's supposedly objective.
Well, because it's an aggregate. It's not like it's all it does is take all the reviewers and makes them give them a rotten or a fresh score. And then they make that into a rating.
But they choose which reviewers are included and they choose like the formula that determines if it's rotten or not.
Yeah.
And then the user reviews, who knows? Like they're
it's always
who...
different. There's always huge disparity. I mean, I think the biggest example was Baywatch this past summer. It had a, I think it was a 79% user score, but then it had a 13% critic score. And it's like, how can the critics be that far off from what people actually enjoy?
And then you compare their ratings to like IMDb or Metacritic or Google's thumbs up, thumbs down thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, sometimes it just seems off.
Yeah.
And never in like a good way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking maybe it would be good if they had thumbs down, thumbs up, and then like two thumbs up.
To like really emphasize. I just think the thumbs up, thumbs down is like it doesn't really give you wiggle room. Like, it's like, what if you thought this movie was okay, not terrible, but not great? Well, what do you give that? You can't give that a thumbs up or a thumbs down.
No, or you don't rate it, and then just the extremists get to decide.
Yeah, people who, like, really hated it or really liked it, not people who are in the middle ground.
Yeah.
Star ratings, that's the way to do it.
It would take a lot for me to give a movie a thumbs down.
I've given a lot of movies thumbs down. I've watched some movies that I'm just like, this is absolute garbage.
I think the only thing that I can remember recently giving a thumbs down was some like hillbilly comedy special that was just I tried to be generous like to continue watching it. I turned it off. Like I stopped it. It was that bad.
I gave a Gabriel Iglesias special a thumbs down once.
On purpose?
Yeah. I was like, this is just he's so hacky. I'm sorry. Yeah. Sorry if Gabriel Iglesias is listening to this.
I just don't even watch him.
He's just, I mean, I just have a problem with people wearing shorts on stage. And like, that's like his costume. Like he's always wearing shorts. And it's just, I don't know. He's just, he's fat and he's Mexican and he lets everybody know it. I'm like, yeah, it's pretty obvious. We get it. Thumbs down.
How did you first get involved in performing comedy?
Somebody said to me, hey, you should go do an open mic. And then I was like, okay. And that was it. I don't know. I've been funny, I guess, for a while. Got voted class clown. Thought I'd graduate. And then I did like other stuff. Like I bartended for a long time. I worked in kitchens and stuff like that. And I thought they were fine. Bartending was fine because I got to kind of perform. You know, you get to be entertaining for people. And then I moved down here to Grand Rapids because I thought to myself, I should start doing comedy. And then I went to an open mic, and then I signed up for an open mic, and then I did it. And the first show I did was really good, which isn't, I guess a lot of comics don't run into that, where you do like a really good first show. And it was a really good first show. And then I was hooked. I was just like, oh, this feels great. Like just making a room full of strangers laugh. It's just a good feeling. And that was it. Then I was like, how do I make this a thing? Like, how do I get paid to do this?
Let's talk about stand-up comedy.
All right.
And this is a very vague prompt, and there's been a lot of confusion over it. And really what I'm asking is for you to please talk about stand-up comedy, but I like the way that let's talk about sounds better, so that's what I use.
Okay.
Yep. So if you could please just talk about...
Just talk about stand-up? Like...
Performing stand-up comedy.
Like what it's like, or...
Yeah, just your thoughts and feelings on the art of stand-up comedy.
I have a little bit of arrogance in me, which is a lot of things that draw me to comedy. It's like I get to stand on stage, and I get a microphone, and I get to talk, and you have to listen to me. And I think that has a lot to do with it. Like, a lot of people will be all virtuous about their answer. Like, I just love making people laugh. And blah, and I do enjoy that. Like, I do genuinely like making people laugh. But I would say I just really like attention. And I can't think of any other profession where you are just the center of attention. Like, if you're an actor, you're with a cast. If you're an improv, you're with a cast. If you're playing a professional sport, you're usually on a team, unless you're like playing golf or something like that. But comedy is like the one thing. Stand-up comedy specifically is like the one thing where it's like I get to do me, and I get to talk endlessly, and you all have to listen to me. And so I guess that's what I like about it. I know a lot of people say it's like therapy, and like they say something sad, they turn into comedy, and then they get to work through it. I guess I do kind of do that, but not to an extreme extent. Like, you always see a lot of stories about, like, comedy and depression are related. Here's why. Which I feel like people need to stop publishing stories about that. Like, it's not a new thing. Like, I just saw one today where it was like, here's how comedy and depression are linked. Like, we get it. Comedians are sad sometimes. Like, it's not a new thing.
Yeah, not too many fresh takes on.
Yeah, it's like like sometimes comics get sad. It happens. I think the story is more so, like, people are surprised that comics get sad. Because, like, their job is to be funny and sometimes positive.
Persona is so different from...
Yeah, like, I mean, look at, like, Robin Williams. Like, you wouldn't think that Robin Williams was, like, a super depressed guy. But obviously, he was. He was unhappy. And so I guess the appeal of an article like that is, like, people might think it's all fun and games. But really, there's sadness in there. Which, I don't know what these voices are. But I don't know. I'm getting off topic. But... I just think that for me, my personal experience with comedy is I just really, really enjoy making people laugh, and that's the best way to make people laugh, I guess, is to do stand up comedy. I love it.
And what's it like traveling to perform?
It sucks. It's the worst part of it.
Oh.
Traveling to perform, being there is fun. Doing a show in a city I've never been to is fun. Learning about that city and then turning that into fun comedy is fun. The actual traveling part sucks. I mean, unless you're like Kevin Hart, where you're flying around on private jets everywhere, it's real boring. Most of the time you're alone. Sometimes you're battling with falling asleep on the road. It's just boredom. It's just like, you got to find a real solid podcast, like the Grandcast. Or you got to find like a great playlist, an audiobook, something that you can do for like 3 hours without even speaking to anybody else.
Yeah.
And I think that's another hard thing too. It's like you go from like, if you're doing a whole day of traveling to go do a show somewhere, you've literally not talked all day long. You've had no human interaction. And then you have to go and be personable like for 30 to 45 minutes. And I feel like that's like a hard thing too for me, which I like to go to whatever venue I'm at. Or, like, walk around the town before the show, talk to people, just so I'm not, like, just like, oh, my God, I haven't seen anybody in so long. Let's talk about everything.
Yeah.
So I just think there's a lot of, like, mental things that you have to get over when you travel a lot. Mm. And the biggest mental thing is just severe boredom. Like, that's why you always see comics go to movies, or you see comics who are always seem to know about everything that's going on in pop culture. And it's because there's just nothing to do. Like, you just listen to the radio, or you're listening to... all this information, and then you go and you talk for 45 minutes, and then you drive all the way back, unless you're doing a weekend gig. Then you get to go to a hotel, maybe get some free drinks bought for you after the show. So, I mean, those are like the weekend shows. Those are the fun ones, because then you get to relax after the show. The thing that sucks is when you drive for 3 hours. Like, I have a show in Decatur, Illinois.
Oh.
I think it's in, like, January or something like that. and it's a one-nighter. So, like, I go down to Decatur, which is, like, 6 hours, mm-hmm. and then I can either pay for a hotel room mm-hmm. or drive all the way back. I'll probably end up driving back. But it's just, like, that's 6 hours, 12 hours of my day I'm going to be in a car to perform for 30 minutes. And, yeah. like, I love comedy, and I like money. So, like, I like doing it for that reason, but, I mean, there's 12 hours I got to fill in a day of just being behind the wheel of a car.
Hmm.
So, I mean, boredom is the one thing that nobody talks about, I think.
Have you thought about getting a CB radio?
A CB radio? Yeah, do people still use those?
Talk to truckers.
That'd be entertaining, probably. They'd probably ask me to tell them jokes. Or yeah. they'd tell me jokes, like really bad trucker jokes. This is a good idea. I don't know. I've never thought about that. A CB radio. I don't think I know any comics that have a CB radio.
You could try out your material and get feedback from...
Holy shit. This is good stuff. I never thought about that. No, that's a really good idea.
You can have it. That's yours. Have you tried performing other forms of comedy?
Like?
You do stand-up. Improv, sketch... That's it.
I've never done either of those. I don't think. Have I? I don't think I have.
Any interest?
Well, I've done like stand-prov, which is like when you like you're doing stand-up, but then you get told topics to do. I've done that, and I've done this place called Louis Trophy House in Kalamazoo has a thing. It's called Writer's Block Party. And they'll do, like, you do 5 minutes of regular stand-up, and then they have these slides that are up behind you, and they'll put topics up on the slides, and you just have to do stand-up based off those. So I've done that kind of stuff. I've never done, like, full-blown improv or sketch, though. I like the idea of sketch. I've never even thought about doing improv. Maybe I've thought about it once or twice, but I've never, like, gone to, like, a workshop or anything like that. And it seems fun. I just haven't gotten into it.
Hmm.
I don't know. I know Stu McAllister mm-hmm. took some improv classes, and he said he really enjoyed it, but he hasn't done it since then, so I don't know if he was lying.
Well, would you be interested in sketch comedy if someone approached you?
Yeah, I mean, I like sketch comedy. Yeah, I think I would. I don't see why not. I don't know. I like comedy, so
yeah.
I'm very rare to turn down something. Like, especially if it's different and out of my comfort zone, I think I like doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of stand-ups don't like being out of their comfort zone. But yeah. I really enjoy, like, just it's something new. All right, let's do that.
Nice. How is Grand Rapids different from other cities for performing comedy?
I think from my standpoint or from, like, a crowd standpoint?
From your perspective.
I think Grand Rapids... I think performing in other cities for me is easier, I think, than in Grand Rapids. One, I don't know anybody in those other cities, so I don't have to worry about anything that I say. not that I generally worry about what I say. But I also feel like Grand Rapids crowds aren't as... there's so much comedy in Grand Rapids. There's so much comedy and improv and art and culture, all different kinds of stuff, that I sometimes... feel like they're a little, this is going to sound insulting to Grand Rapids people, but they're a little less appreciative because there's just so much of it. Like you can go to Dr. Grin and see a nationally touring headlining comedian every weekend. And so there's just so much opportunities to see good comedy that when I do shows in Grand Rapids, I do find it's harder to get laughs I get laughs, but it just seems like I can do a show in the middle of nowhere and I can say almost anything and people think it's hilarious. Like they eat it up out of it. And it's here, I got to try a little bit harder, which I'm not against trying harder. I like being challenged. But so I think that's the difference for me. Also, I just feel like the stand-up scene in Grand Rapids is starting to shrink a bit. It's definitely a lot of, there used to be a lot of open mics. There used to be 5 open mics in Grand Rapids when I first started doing comedy. And now there's... There's Tip Top and then Dr. Grin's.
Oh, is Holiday Bar?
I actually ran the Holiday Bar comedy show, and we stopped doing it. Yeah, we're in the middle of looking for a new venue for it, so it's gonna come back.
Okay,
I'm still trying to find a new place for it, but we took it. We stopped doing it at the Holiday Bar. Stu McAllister still does Tonight there. Mm-hmm. But
that's the talk show.
Yeah,
like a live talk show.
Yeah, but the open mic is in transition right now.
Ah. Fulton Street Pub also does.
Oh, Wednesdays. That's right. Yep. I forgot about them. So yeah, so I mean, like, there's not a lot, and then I actually did Full
Tip
Street
Top Pub Tuesdays.
Yeah, Tip Top, Dr. Grins on Thursdays, and then Full Street on Wednesday. But I mean, like, when I first started doing comedy, there was like Cousins Lounge on Mondays, there was Drake's, there was Sunday Night Funnies on Sundays.
Oh,
there was Tip Top, there was Dr. Grins, and I want to say there was one more, but there was five open mics, and then now it's just shrinking. And then I think a lot of comics are just moving too, like. The comedy scene for all the stand-up comics was a lot bigger when I started, and now it's a little bit smaller. We gotta start supporting live comedy,
right? Yeah.
But yeah, so no, I would say it's harder to get laughs, and sometimes you have to watch. Like I guest hosted at Dr. Grin's. People are a little sensitive in Grand Rapids.
Some of them, yeah.
and like smaller cities, it's like people don't give. I can talk so much garbage about a city when I'm in a different city, and they just like, yeah, woo! But like in Grand Rapids, you say anything that may be slightly offensive to anybody, and you could have like I did a guest spot at Dr. Grin's, and I guest spot I hosted for a weekend at Dr. Grin's a couple of months ago, and I had a joke about going to see the movie The Force Awakens, and all the tickets were sold out except for the handicapped seat, so I bought it. And then I prayed that there wasn't anybody in a wheelchair was going to show up. And then I went out into the lobby to get some ice or popcorn. And not popcorn, I was getting icy. And there was a guy in a wheelchair, like, in line. And I'm just like, don't go in my theater. Like, I'm not going to give up my seat for you. And there was three people in wheelchairs at that show, at Dr. Grin's, when I told that joke. And, like, people were like, oh. They're like, oh, like, there's somebody in a wheelchair in here. And there was three people. And they're just like, yeah, we're all in wheelchairs. And I'm just like, well, then you should be happy you're included. Like, you don't want to, like, you know. I mean, you want to feel like part of the group, right? So, I mean, people are definitely more vocal about being upset about crap in Grand Rapids than other cities. I think other smaller cities, people are just happy that somebody came to their city to entertain them. And Grand Rapids is like, we've got all these options. You better make us happy. And I'm like, you know, look at some art or something.
Huh.
I do love Grand Rapids. Let's get this straight. I don't hate this city.
It's a great city.
It's a fun city. I really enjoy it. It's just sometimes people can be a little sensitive.
Yeah. For watching, do you prefer improv, stand-up, or sketch comedy?
I think for watching, I would say improv and sketch over stand-up, just because I see so much stand-up to the point where it's like, if you do anything, like if you work at Pizza Hut, you don't eat pizza all the time.
Yeah.
I was raised on Saturday Night Live, so like I love sketch comedy. It's more of like a, like stand-up is like, how do I compare this? Stand-up is like watching like an orchestra, right? Like going to like a orchestral show where there's a conductor and it's all very prepared and rehearsed. And then watching improv is like going to a jazz club where it's like everything is just, you're just feeding off all the emotions and all the feelings in the room, and everything's just kind of whizzing by at a fresh, upbeat pace. You don't really know what's going to happen or where the funny's going to come from. Huh. So I think that it's like, it's kind of like, not to use a phrase I don't really like, but apples and oranges.
Sure.
But it's like, if I want to see stand up, I see it all the time. And if I'm gonna go to enjoy something, it's gonna be probably improv or sketch. If I'm just like, oh, I just want to do something different, so I'll go see that. So that would be my reasoning. Not that I don't like stand up. I just see so much stand up.
Do you have something against apples or oranges?
I just don't like the phrase. I just like the phrase doesn't make sense to me. Like, it's like comparing apples and oranges. You can definitely compare apples and oranges. Like, there's no, you can like apples and not like oranges. There's no rule that says you can't compare them. I think the idea behind the phrase is like, because they're two different fruits, like they're not comparable, but you can easily compare the two. Like, if someone says to you, do you like steak? No. Do you like chicken? Yeah. Well, then you like steak and you don't like, you know? So I think that's my problem with that phrase.
Huh.
I think Lil Dicky said it best. Bitch, that phrase don't make no sense. Why can't fruit be compared?
My first experience with Lil Dicky was watching Pillow Talking.
Oh my god, that's from that song.
Oh.
Yeah, she's like, she says, you know, apples and oranges. He said, bitch, that phrase don't make no sense. Why can't fruit be compared? It's like towards the end of their argument when he's really upset. Because like, he's talking about, what does he say when she compares apples and oranges for the second time? He was talking about, because when they're talking about God, why can't God be an alien? And then she was like, well, you know, apples and oranges.
I need to go back and watch that.
Oh my God, that video is so good.
Pretty intoxicated the first couple times.
That's such a great song. It's really well written.
Yeah. I had no clue what I was getting into. And it was very interesting and well done. What is a good movie that you watched recently?
Oh, that's a good one. Brawl on Cell Block 99. Garrett Elsinger and I went and saw it because we, like I said earlier, before the podcast, I said we watched a lot of movies. But no, it's Vince Vaughn. It's about a guy. I don't want to give any spoilers. Obviously, it ends in a brawl in Cell Block 99.
Oh.
But it's about a guy essentially who will go through any lengths to protect his family. It's a weird, it's a really, really hard R violent movie. But like the violence is very, it's kind of like the violence in Drive, how it's like really sparse, but when it does happen, it's really violent.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just it's a gripping movie. It's pretty methodical. The first two acts, I'd say, are real slow. Interesting slow, but then the third act just ramps it up. And I was surprised. Speaking of Rotten Tomatoes, that movie has like a 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. But I think it's well-deserved. I think it's a really good movie. And it's pretty under the radar. A lot of people didn't see it. But if you ever get a chance, I recommend it. It's really good.
I don't really watch violent stuff anymore.
Don't recommend it then. You'll probably hate it.
Yeah. I used to. I didn't have any problems with it. And then the more that I realized I don't really forget too much stuff that I watch, like it all kind of goes in my brain and sticks there. It's like, I don't need that much
violence. Another good one, Baby Driver, that just came out on Blu-ray. Ugh, I love that. I saw the movie 4 times in theaters. I love that movie. I love it.
It was extremely well executed. Like as a heist movie, it's the perfect example of the genre, I thought.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you got a heist movie, you got a musical, essentially. You've got a coming of age tale. It's got everything. It's Edgar Wright. That guy can do no wrong in my mind.
Personally, I didn't feel like it lived up to all the hype that surrounded it. And I don't know. I only saw it the one time. But everything I read about it was like, oh, it's like the movie of the year. Like,
I'd recommend a second watch through. There's a lot of times when, like, just. If you just pay attention to the choreography between the music and everything else in the movie, that alone for me is what did it for me. Like, I just think like the amount of work that had to go into blocking that movie, plotting that movie, just so that everything worked out perfectly with the soundtrack. And even the music in the soundtrack is so like on the nose. Like every song is completely relevant to the scene that's happening in. I thought it was a really well put together film.
It was extremely well executed. But I don't go back and rewatch Ronin. Like, heist movies for me are kind of like one and done.
Sure.
Like, I know what happened.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's just not, for me, that's a genre that doesn't have a lot of repeatability.
So you're not a big Fast and Furious fan, I take
it. I love Fast and Furious.
Oh, really?
I watch them once.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I remember I saw the newest one in theaters with my friend Steve. And I enjoy them. Like, they're my guilty pleasure.
Yeah.
Like, I really enjoy those movies. And I get that they're stupid, dumb fun.
Oh, of course.
But I could not get behind the newest one. I was
no?
just... I thought The Rock and Jason Statham, I thought they were fantastic. I'm really glad they're getting a spinoff.
What?
Yeah, they're getting a spinoff.
A Fast and Furious?
It's a spinoff. It's just Hobbs and... what's his name?
I don't know.
Whatever Jason Statham's
name. I didn't pay attention to the names.
It really got Tyrese and The Rock got into a feud over it because Tyrese's only paychecks are Fast and Furious movies. And they're delaying the next one to make the spinoff with The Rock and Jason. So Tyrese is all pissed because he's like, hey man, you know, I was looking for that paycheck essentially. And The Rock's like, people want to see us. And I do. Like, I think they have great chemistry together. Yeah. But I just couldn't, my main, here's when I stopped. What I stopped following along with that movie was one, the fact that Jason Statham murdered their friend, and like they don't care, they're just gonna work with him now. Like Han was totally killed by him, and like Vin Diesel's whole thing, family, we're all about family and Corona, and so and so, how are they all working with this guy who murdered their friend not too long ago? And then when it came to the part where they need to intercept that limousine. Like, they got Dom to, like, get that limousine, and like Charlize Theron had all the computer chips inside of all those other cars, yeah. and she made all those other cars remotely drive around and like smash it. And yeah. like she's got hundreds of cars like flowing through New York or wherever the city they were in.
Yeah.
And like they're coming out of parking garages and they're smashing everybody. And my first thought is, if she can hack into cars, just hack into that limo and stop it. Like instead of destroying all of those other cars, just hack into the guy's limousine and just stop the car and then rob him or whatever you got to do. And that's when I was like, you know what? Maybe this movie's not that great.
Yeah. It was still entertaining.
No, it was entertaining. But I mean, like, you got the... Also, I just have a hard time. I feel like Tyrese is just making black actors look bad at this point. Like, he's just... He's in there just to go, woo! And, oh! And say something real funny and then collect his paycheck. And it's like, the character is just the most underdeveloped character in all of the characters in that film. Like the, why are you driving an orange Lamborghini on an ice... like rink while being chased by a submarine? Everyone else has vehicles that are like pertinent to the mission they're on. Like Ludacris is driving like that little tank with like all the tech stuff in it. The Rock's got that big like hulking vehicle. Vin Diesel's got that sweet Dodge Charger. And then Tyrese picks a Lamborghini. You're driving on ice. You don't even have snow tires on it. He just picked a Lamborghini for the hell of it. Just a really bad character.
And what is a good streaming show that you watched recently?
Streaming show?
Yep. So Netflix, Hulu, okay. YouTube, Vimeo.
I'm actually watching Ozark right now with Jason Bateman and...
The drug one?
Yeah, and Laura Linney. That's a good show. I think it's a really good show. It's like a super, if it's possible to say this, but a really dark version of Breaking Bad. Like, because Breaking Bad was pretty dark. But yeah. Ozark, I feel like, is like 1,000 times darker than that show.
Huh.
And I will say, I do think it takes a lot of less creative liberties than Breaking Bad. I think I think the best example of how good Breaking Bad was the episode The Fly, and it's the one where he and Jesse are in the lab, and it's a bottle episode, and it's just them trying to kill a fly. But then by the end of it, you find out like you really dive into like both these guys like their intentions and their. So I think that is like how creative I thought Breaking Bad got. I don't think Ozark ever gets to that level. Granted, I think I'm 3 episodes in, but I don't think it's that level.
That'd be hard. Breaking Bad, for me, was the best television drama ever made.
I agree, 100%. Like, without dispute, I think it's the best drama that's ever been put on television, or in any form of media. I think it was one of those shows where, like, I was so gripped every time I watched it. I'm just like... And it's one of the few shows that made me just go, like, while watching. Like, I felt for it every time something happened.
And they knew from the beginning what the whole show was.
Yeah,
they knew where they were going. They knew each step of the way. Like, this is what we're doing. They could foreshadow so much.
Mm-hmm.
And they just executed so well.
I think it really helps. I think that's the thing that people always talk about, how Netflix has such great programming. And I think the model of Netflix lends itself to great programming. Because when you're on a TV show, like corporate cable television, network television, you don't know when your show's going to end. You start it, and then it just keeps going until people stop watching it. And then you think, oh, shit, the next season's going to be our last season. We got to wrap this up now. I think Lost really fell victim to that, too.
Ugh.
If Lost were on Netflix, that show would have been amazing. That would have been the greatest show of all time. Because like you have a clear path. Like, you're not going to get canceled. The odds of you getting canceled on Netflix, you got to be a real bad show. Because like, they're just giving money to everybody.
Yeah.
So I feel like when you have a show on Netflix and it's just like, I watched it on Netflix. It was on AMC, obviously, Breaking Bad was. But I feel like when you have a show where it's like the show, we know it's going to be 5 seasons long. We know how we're going to start, how we're going to end. There's no reason it shouldn't be a good show because you never have any uncertainty about where your concept is going to go. You have a concept and you see it through. And I think AMC lends itself to that kind of stuff too because, again, they don't really cancel shows very often. Like The Walking Dead has been seeing a steady decline in viewership for the last 5 seasons, but it's still going. Granted, it's still a juggernaut when it comes to ratings, but I mean, it's not anywhere near as high as it used to be. Even Preacher, which I don't know anybody who watches that show, just got renewed for its 3rd season.
I tried. Like, I watched, I think, the whole first season because it's Seth Rogen. Like, he's one of my heroes.
Yeah.
The idea is good, but it's just so, like, it's so weird.
Is it weird? Yeah, I heard it's weird.
Yeah. It's, like, very strange stuff. I don't know.
I am excited. Stranger Things premiered today.
Yeah.
So I might have to take a day out and binge that whole second season. God, that show is so good, too.
Yeah. I don't watch horror stuff anymore, really. So I wasn't going to watch the first season, but so many people told me, like,
that's exactly how I was.
It's a great show. Like, there's a lot of fantasy elements. It's not like jump scares. It's not cheap horror.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like an alternate possible universe that's super creepy.
Yeah. And, I mean, I'm the same way. I'm not a big horror guy. Like, I saw It only because everybody else said it was really good. So I was like, okay, I guess I'll give it a shot. And I did enjoy It a lot. But I don't generally watch horror stuff. And I avoided Stranger Things. I heard about it at the beginning of the summer last year. And people were like, oh, it's so Stranger Things. I'm like, oh, it's a horror. I'm not going to watch that crap. I'm not going to watch it. And then I was like, oh, it's set in the 80s. And I'm like, I really enjoy the 80s. And then I watched it. I was like, this is great. This is a great show. It was a really, all the actors in it, every actor of that show. When you have a show where you could watch Matthew Modine and think, he's pretty good in this show. It must be a decent show.
Yeah.
Winona Ryder's back.
The only thing that got me was the product placement. That fucking Eggo waffle box.
Oh, yeah. You must hate that Michael Bay movies.
No.
Really? Those things are filled with product placement.
But I know that they're terrible movies that are just spectacles. They're not like a serious production. Like, you're not supposed to be emotionally involved in a Transformer film.
But
like,
I mean, when Bumblebee is getting beat up by Optimus Prime.
That is, yeah, a little... tugs at your heartstrings.
But... Shia LaBeouf screams, no, 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 for the 14th time.
It's Marky Mark now. He's in
that's
the
true, yeah. Which, Mark Wahlberg is such a weird choice with roles that he takes.
He's a terrible actor.
But I mean, he's good in some stuff, but in some stuff, he's horrible. Like, yeah. The Departed, thought he was fantastic. The other guy, thought he was hilarious. The Happening, what the fuck? Like, I just don't understand what he's doing sometimes. Oh. Like, it was Transformers, the first one with Mark Wahlberg. I don't remember what it was called. I just call him Transformers. Yeah. It was the fourth one.
That was the fourth one?
Because there was Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, Dark of the Moon was the last Shia LaBeouf one, and then whatever, then that was the Mark Wahlberg one was the fourth one. And then the fifth one, The Last Night, just came out this past year.
Okay.
But I remember there was a scene, and for me, it was, like, every time a Transformers movie comes out, I give it a benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
Because I loved the first one. I thought it was fantastic. I know it was campy. The second one I thought was bad. I was like, this is not a good movie. The third one I thought, this is good again. It's pretty decent. And then I was like, I went into the other one, the newest Mark Wahlberg, not the newest one, but the first Mark Wahlberg one, just like, clear my palate here. I got a new, no Shia LaBeouf anymore. We're going to watch this. I watched it. And then there was the scene where you got Stanley Tucci, the Tooch, what a great actor, criminally underrated.
Yeah.
And he's just a shill for like advertising the pill by Beats.
Yeah.
And then you got the scene where the giant thing is like destroying Chicago again. And then there's a scene where it's this giant ship that uses electromagnets to pick up other smaller vessels and throw them at Mark Wahlberg and Stanley Tucci in a car. And then Mark Wahlberg's head is hanging out the window and he says, look, it's a giant magnet. It's picking things up and throwing them at us. That's when I was like, nope, I'm done. I'm done. I'm done. This is terrible.
You need that exposition.
Like, what are you doing? Like, we can see what's happening. It's the only thing on screen right now. I just feel like Marky Mark. Come on, man.
The only reason why I love those films is because if you took one of those and you showed it to someone in 1980,
their brain would explode. They'd lose their minds, yeah.
It's giant robots fighting each other in 3D on an IMAX-sized screen. It's just... it's insane.
Like, you know, I will give... the special effects in those movies are amazing. Like, yes. I remember in the first Transformers I watched, I'm like, these are real goddamn robots. I'm like they, it just looks... now it's to the point now where it's like, I just feel like it's too... like, I think the first one they balanced out using CGI and not using it really well, which I think a lot of movies don't do well anymore. Like, Mad Max, I think, was a great example. Fury Road, of when to use CGI and when not to use CGI. Because there's a lot of CGI in Mad Max Fury Road, but people always praise it for all of its practical effects. Yeah. And it was, I think, 80% practical effects. But there's also a lot of CGI, but it's so good that you can't tell.
It's not distracting.
Like, that's good CGI.
Like Blade Runner.
Oh, my God. Like, that movie doesn't... none of that movie looks fake. I mean, it is all fake. Like, it's all it's all green screen, but it doesn't look like it. And I thought the first Transformers balanced that really well. Whereas now, the newer ones, it's just like everything's blowing up and it's fucking... you can't tell what robot's doing. I just...
Fast and the Furious, too. It was the same thing. They used real cars and did real...
they really pulled a plane down. That wasn't real.
Yeah, and now there's like submarines and
flying. Have you ever seen the stat on how long the runway is in that movie?
The
scene takes 15 minutes for them to pull down this plane while it's on a runway. Yeah. And for that to actually be possible with how fast the plane was going, the runway would have had to have been 35 miles long. Because look at the 15-minute scene, the plane is constantly going down a runway. Yeah. And then they pull it down with five cars. Which, you know, the Fast and Furious logic.
Oh, boy. Let's talk about Holiday Bar. I didn't know any recent events, but a lot of the times that I've seen you perform, it's been at Holiday Bar, and mm-hmm. I know that, I guess now you were running a comedy show there on some Mondays, most Mondays?
It was the first two Mondays of the month. Mm-hmm. The first two Mondays would be open mic comedy. The third Monday would be Tonight, Stu's talk show. And the fourth Monday was Dixon Flicks, which was mine, Stu, and Garrett's Mystery Science Theater 3000 style show. All of those are on hiatus except for Tonight. I stopped working part-time at Holiday Bar. And then through some other things, the comedy show, we decided that it wasn't a fit there anymore. So we're now in the market for a new home for our little comedy show. And hopefully my goal is to get it back up and running before the end of November. On top of a bunch of other stuff that I'm doing. But it's in there. It's in the priority sheet folder. It's a folder. It's on a sheet in the folder.
What was your experience like as a showrunner, like organizing things and organizing people?
So that was the second comedy show I ran. I used to run a show up in northern Michigan in Petoskey at a place called the Red Sky Stage. And a showrunner, it's kind of like when you throw a party at your house. You don't really get to enjoy it kind of thing.
Hmm.
For me, it's like it's a lot of stress. I streamlined it to where I booked the entire month at once, which was easy for me. Like, I thought it was a lot easier. I know a lot of comedy shows don't do that. A lot of them just go, like, you know, sign-ups for next week's show or tonight, sign up, blah, blah. And I just felt like that's going to take too much time up in my entire month. Like, every week I got to worry about booking a new show. So I decided my first thing when I took over that show was I'm going to book the entire month at once. And it worked perfectly. I had the whole month booked. But then, of course, with most comedy, you know, you get people dropping, and then you need to get replacements, and then you worry about people showing up to the show. And so for me, we would get really good turnouts for, like, the Tonight show and for Dixon Flicks, but it was hard. It was real hit and miss for the open mic. Mm. Sometimes the crowds would be awesome. Like, you get a nice, decent turnout. Sometimes there would be 6-7 people there. Sometimes it'd be packed, but nobody would be there to listen to comedy.
Mm.
So it was constantly me making sure that all the comics show up, and after that, hoping people show up, and then during the show, getting them to pay attention to the show, all while, you know, trying to keep the show running smoothly. hosting is a lot more work, obviously, than just performing, and there's a lot of things that go in while you're hosting is to keep the momentum of a show going. I think a lot of hosts don't know how to do that. I'm not going to name names, but I mean, like, a lot of times you'll have hosts who will come up after a comic goes on, like, say, like, you do a set, and then I come up, oh, man, wasn't he great? He was fantastic. That reminds me of this thing. And then the host tells 5 minutes worth of jokes. And then sometimes it does well. Sometimes it derails the show. If a comic has a real good set, keep the show moving, you know? Go on to the next comic. We don't need you. The show's not about the host. And I think a lot of people don't understand, like, the show's about the comics, the comedians. People didn't come here to see me. Sometimes they did, but I mean, for the most part, people come out to support the people that are on the lineup. So, I mean, if a comic does really well, I'm not going to step on his good time. I'm going to, all right, let's keep the show going. Let's go on to the next comedian. The adverse of that is if a comic does really bad, then you kind of want to bring the crowd back in, you know, like make a quick joke, something, a minute maybe, just to get the crowd back laughing again, and then move on to the next one. That's like that whole, it's like a little dance. You just gotta weigh the room, find out what's going on where and when to save things. The one thing I can recommend to anybody who ever wants to host a comedy show is don't do material for 5 minutes between each comic. Every comic will hate you and you'll ruin the show. Just FYI. I mean, every comic hates that. Like, I did a show one time. I'm not going to say who ran the show, but I did a show where I was the headliner, which it was a showcase. I wasn't really a headliner. I went last. And I was supposed to do 20 minutes. And the host of the show, between each comedian, did a total of 45 minutes. Hmm. Like, he would introduce. He did his show, his set first to open the show, which is about 15 minutes. And he'd bring the next comic on. They do 10 minutes. Then he would go on again and do another 10 minutes. And then he introduced the next comic and they do their time. And then he'd go on again and do another 15 minutes. And it's like, you did more time than I did. And I'm supposed to be closing the show. So, I mean, like, this, that's like a, I feel like that's a huge thing when it comes to hosting that people should figure out first is the show is not about the host. It's about the comedy. It's about the comics. That's what I think.
I wonder if people feel the same way about this show.
This show?
Yeah.
I think they just want
me to ask the questions and let people respond.
Well, I mean, I think that's the format you've produced. You know what I mean? Like, anybody who listens to this show would probably expect that. Whereas if you listen to like a Mark Maron or Joe Rogan, then it's like you expect to hear their opinions about stuff. You really expect to hear Mark Maron's because he really likes to give it. But
I'm more of a fan of Joe Rogan than Mark Maron.
I don't like either of them.
Oh.
I think that Joe Rogan is too smart for his own good. He's a very intelligent man.
Yeah.
But I just think that he has a tendency to go off on tangents and just say things that are just way out of the realm of what was actually being talked about. Like, he'll just go off on this and this and this, and all of a sudden he's over here. And, like, the guest is, like, over here still, and then he's off talking, Googling pictures of gorillas and stuff. Mark Maron, I've never been a Mark Maron fan.
He has a very strong personality.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very funny, though. I'm a big fan of both podcasts. Are there any podcasts that you listen to religiously?
There are only two podcasts that I listen to all the time. So, like, when I'm on the road, there's two podcasts that I always have ready to go. It's the Bill Simmons podcast, which is, he's a sports guy. He used to be on ESPN. He got fired because he had an opinion about the NFL that didn't align with the
corporate sponsors.
Corporate's ideas. One of the things I respect about Bill Simmons a lot, though, is like he has always just been like an unabashed sports fan, to the point where he'll just say whatever he wants. And like, obviously, ESPN sucks the teat of the NFL. Like, they don't want to piss off the NFL.
And it's Disney.
Like, oh, yeah. They're all in bed together. And yeah. Bill Simmons would regularly just criticize Roger Goodell, the NFL, and ESPN would suspend him, and then they'd fine him, and then eventually they just fired him. But he's got a very entertaining podcast called the BS Podcast. If you're into sports, it's really also pop culture. He's got, like, comedians on there all the time. He's got athletes and stuff. And then my favorite all-time, I've listened to every podcast for the last probably year now, like, religiously, is Bill Burr. Like, I love Bill Burr's podcast. It's just him, and he's always angry. And I just think he's entertaining. I don't know what it is about him. Like, I know a lot of people don't. I know a lot of people don't like. He's not their cup of tea. Yeah. But I just think he's just so unabashedly himself. Like, he's just like, this is how I feel. And he's usually, sometimes he's got an abrasive opinion about things. Like, there's times I've listened to him, and I'm just like,
but how much do you think his opinions are his own and how much are just like embellishments for the entertainment aspect of being angry at a thing?
I think just from watching him for years, I think, and I don't know him, obviously. I had a chance to meet him once and I missed out on a different story. But I think that it's him. Like, if you look at like his advertisers, like when he does like his reads on his podcast, he loses advertisers every week. Because he'll just do reads and he'll read them like he'll just like there's one advertiser called MeUndies.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they're on tons of podcasts. And they've stuck with him since like they first started sponsoring podcasts. And I think they understand, like, they get like what his thing is. Like, when he talks about your product, he's gonna talk like Bill Burr would talk about your product. Mm-hmm. He's not gonna be like a corporate show like MeUndies, the softest underwear. Like, he literally will say like
3 times softer than cotton.
Yes. And he'll say things like like, he always says, MeUndies, when you want a soft feeling on your ball bag. Like, and I'm like, a lot of corporate sponsors don't want people saying that. But, like, yeah. Bill Burr's just like, I don't give a shit. And then he'll lose a sponsor. Yeah. Just be like, we lost another one. So I do feel like he's just himself on there. I think he knows that what is entertaining about himself. And it might be somewhat embellished. But I do think that most of it is pretty genuine. He genuinely just hates a lot of stuff. No, I was listening. I did a show in Muskegon a couple of months ago, and I was on my way back from the show listening to the Bill Burr podcast because that's what I do. And I got a text message from my friend. It was a picture of him with Bill Burr, Because Burr dropped in at Dr. Grin's.
You waited until you were not driving to check your text messages?
Sure didn't. I was, I think it was, I was turning on, like flipping to a different podcast, like to the next episode. And it was one of those Facebook Messenger things, like popped up. And I just saw this picture of my friend with Bill Burr. And I got pissed cause, just because I love Bill Burr. Yeah. But yeah, he dropped it at Dr. Grin's, did a guest spot, hung out in the green room, talked to the all the comics.
Huh.
So I missed that. That was nice. For a show in Muskegon. It was a good show, though. Wait, was it? No, it wasn't even a good show. I'll actually be back there, Sherman Bowling Center in December. But no, the show was... it was a nice venue. And Don, the guy who runs the show, is a really nice guy. The MC is my friend Ricardo, super nice guy. The headliner that night was a great guy. Seven people showed up to the show.
Mm.
I mean, I still got paid, but like, because like, it's under contract. But I mean, like... Driving back from a show where it's like seven people were there, I felt like it wasn't worth it, and I missed my chance to meet Bill Burr. So that was a rough night for me.
Do you like his Netflix show?
F is for Family? Yeah, I love it. I think it's really funny. I think it's a lot more serious than most cartoon comedies are, which I really enjoy. Although I did find, have you seen both seasons?
Yes.
I did find that I think the second season they really realized they were on Netflix because there's a lot more like sex and nudity. Like the second season, they were like, wait a minute, we're on Netflix. We can just do whatever we want.
Yeah.
But no, I really like it. I think it's a really good show. I like any kind of show that's like nostalgic and like talks about Americana. Just the fact was it what the episode where he started working nights doing vending machine repair?
Oh, yeah.
And our film of vending machines and then his black boss came into his neighborhood and everyone started freaking out. No, I think it's a good show. It's a funny show. It's a very Bill Burr show.
Yeah. Well done. I think season 3 must be coming out sometime.
They're working on it right now. I know because of the podcast.
What is comedy to you?
Oh, paycheck. No. I don't know what comedy is to me. It's an outlet, I guess. It's... a chance for me to get to say, I mean, I'm pretty open already. I don't really, I guess the things that I get to say outrageous things and people get to laugh and applaud at it. And it's things that I wouldn't be able to get away with saying, I think in reality, although I do kind of say whatever I want in reality already. But I mean, like if I'm in a group of people that I don't, if I'm in a room with a bunch of strangers and they don't know I'm a comedian and I start saying the things that I would normally say on stage, there'd probably be weird reactions. So I think comedy to me is being able to not feel ashamed of who you really are, like just being able to be yourself. And I think any good comic will tell you that they don't become a good comic until they find out who they are first. So yeah, it's like it's an outlet for being you. I think everybody normally lives a pretty muted version of themselves in public, at least. In private, you're obviously you're dick swinging, you do whatever you want when you're in private. But in public, you're always a muted version of yourself, unless you're drunk or something like that. And I think comedy is like the one chance you get to be in public and you don't have to hold anything back. You can just do whatever you want and say whatever you want. And if they don't like it, you say, fuck it, you paid to see me. I don't care. I didn't come here to see you. So yeah, to me, it's like comedy is being the unmuted version of yourself.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I like that.
If you knew for absolute certain that 1 year from now, humanity would go extinct, how would you spend that time?
Jeez, I'd probably do a lot of drugs. I've never done a drug, and so I feel like that's the first thing I would do. I'd be like, let me do all these drugs real quick, just to try all the stuff that I didn't. Like, it's bad for you. That's why you don't do them, right? Like, they're bad for you. They make you have bad decisions. Like, if you do cocaine, you might jump off the roof of a building. Like, that's why you don't do them. Like, the consequences. But I mean, a year from now, I got no contact with this. I'll probably smoke cigarettes too. I don't know. I think I would just only do bad stuff.
Huh.
I think I'd just do things that don't, that things that normally have consequences. I would do all the things that seem exciting, but also seem like I would go to jail for a long time. But if we're all dead in a year, who gives a shit?
Huh.
I wouldn't murder anybody. I might murder somebody. No, I don't think I'd murder anybody.
mild, medium, hot, or fire?
Fire. I mean, right? Is there another answer?
What does it mean to be a comedian?
What does it mean? Like, by definition? I don't know. Having no other tangible qualities about you? I don't know. That's a hard question. That's a broad question, I guess.
Yeah, you can answer it however you'd like.
What does it mean to be a comedian? To be expected, I think, is the thing. When someone finds out you're a comedian, there's a certain, oh, this guy's going to be really funny. Or this guy's going to be able to take whatever I say to him and not care. Like, I think that's a big problem with comedy is like people don't think you should have emotions. I have emotions. I don't tend to use them a lot, but I mean, I have them. Like if someone talks shit about me, I'm going to be like, hey, that's not cool. Well, you're a comedian. You can take it. People expect a lot of things of you when you're a comedian.
Hmm.
And my friend Adam Deggy posted a status the other day. He had a rough show in Ohio and he came home and I talked to him about it on the phone. And then the next day he posted a status on Facebook that said, after last night, I know I a lot of things like put things in perspective for me. And he put this really nice, thought out, sweet thing on Facebook about how he's got to like take things seriously and all this kind of stuff. And then all the comments are just like, ah, you suck. You're terrible. You should quit. And it's like, no, he has a real emotion, something that actually happened to him. And then I remember I posted on it. It's like, oh, Adam, you're a comedian. You're not supposed to feel things. Remember that? And it's like people just expect certain things of you when you're a comedian. It's like they expect you to not have real emotions. They expect you to not take everything seriously. They expect you to be funny on command. That's a sad answer, but I think, yeah, for me, to be a comedian means to be expected.
I really enjoy Adam Deggy's Tom Hanks movie bit.
Oh my God, it's so funny.
It's so good.
That's really good. Have you, his new album's available on iTunes right now.
And Amazon?
iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, all of it. It's called, his name is My Name Too. There we go. I actually performed his album release party at Creston Brewery.
Is it John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt?
Yeah, if he was a serial killer.
My Name Too.
It's like I have to be somebody like John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt, and I'd be in trouble because his name is My Name Too. I still add another time. I'm at a podcast talking about how great his album is.
Can you stream it anywhere, or you have to buy it to listen to it?
You can stream it on Spotify.
Spotify?
Yeah. I think he gets money for that. I hope he does.
No.
I know. We listened to the whole album on Spotify. I hope he gets paid for that.
I'll have to check that out.
It's a really good album. Adam's funny as shit, so.
Mike, who are some of your role models?
Role models? I don't even know if I have any role models. Role models. Who do I look up to? Oh, Jesus, I don't think I have any. My dad was a pretty big role model. He's super dead now. But since then, I don't think I have any role models. I really don't. That's a weird answer.
No, that's all right.
I don't know. I don't think I do. I can't think of anybody who I model my life after. I don't have any role models. All my role models are dead. It's going to be the name of my first comedy album.
That would be, like, it could be someone from the past. It just,
I mean, I can think of people who I could think of that would maybe be influential, but I don't think I have anybody who I think of, what would this person do? Like, because I feel like that's the idea of a role model. It's like you want to model, like, your life after them, and you think, what would Jesus do? Like, I don't think I have a role model.
All right, that's fair.
We'll lobby that up with my favorite color.
Let's talk about working at the Radisson and Sunday Night Funnies.
Oh, jeez.
Or whatever it was, Riverbend Bar?
The Riverfront Hotel.
It used to be Radisson.
It was Radisson before it was the Riverfront. I worked there when it was the Riverfront.
Okay.
And now it's the Grand River Hotel or something like that.
I don't know.
That was one of the worst jobs I ever had in my entire life. That was, I liked the Sunday Night Funnies. It was a good comedy show. Brian B, who used to book that, definitely got a bad reputation in the stand-up comedy scene in Grand Rapids. A lot of comics didn't like things that he did and said and the way he ran his show. But there's no denying that it was a good show. It was always a good crowd. It was always packed. He'd been running it for 7 years. Working at the hotel sucked. Management there was horrible. Actually, I quit there after being berated by the owner of the hotel in front of a bunch of bar guests. And then when I tried to pull him aside and say, hey, if you have something to talk to me about disciplinary-wise, you should take me aside and do that. This is not how we do that here. And I say here because he was Indian, and I think that Indian culture is a lot different when it comes to like hierarchy than American culture. Like in Indian culture, it's like the boss is the boss and everyone else is like beneath him. Whereas in America, we try to do like the whole leader thing. And I don't think he really grasped that concept. Like he very much, like he wouldn't let any women be managers there. Like he was very, he wasn't a great guy to work for. His name was Sonny. And he just did a lot of things that I didn't approve of. And I'm a very strong-willed person. Like, I'm like, if I see something wrong, I'm like, this isn't right. You shouldn't do this way. So I actually got a chance to go back because I quit. But then I was on the Sunday Night Funnies the next week. And so I went back and just talked so much trash about him in his hotel, to which all the staff applauded by the end. Like, it was pretty bad. He was a really bad guy. But the people I worked with, I really liked. Sean Williams, Jacob, can't remember his last name. Jamie, can't remember her last name. I remember Sean, that's about it. But no, they're all really cool people, and I really enjoyed that show. It was actually the first time I ever did stand-up comedy was at the Sunday Night Funnies. But now it's not there.
Let's talk about Halloween. So how do you feel about it? What's your favorite candy? What's your favorite costume?
You know, I normally really enjoy Halloween. I feel like this year I've just been so busy. I haven't even gotten a chance to stop, and I didn't get a costume this year. I'm probably not going to do anything. I might do something. I don't know. I really like Halloween. I like doing characters. Like, I do a lot of voice stuff. Like, I do different voices, and Halloween's obviously when you get to just be somebody else. As far as favorite costumes go, I was Barack Obama a couple of years ago. I was actually Barack Obama. I went to a Halloween party at a casino in northern Michigan and got arrested. And I had to sit in jail as Barack Obama. And then I got arraigned the next morning in court, still dressed as Barack Obama. And I was told by the judge, he says, I understand you're arrested at a Halloween party. I said, yeah. He says, who are you? And I'm literally, I'm in northern Michigan, so I'm the only black guy there. And I'm sitting in the courtroom with like a suit on, American flag lapel. I've got gray hair. And I'm like, I'm Barack Obama. And then he says to me, well, this is a Republican district, so.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, that doesn't seem like a conflict of interest at all. But yeah, that was probably my favorite costume. And I got to do my Obama impression all night. I always do all my costumes revolve around impressions I can do. Like, I remember in college, I was Cleveland from Family Guy. Which is super easy. Just get a yellow t-shirt. I just grew a mustache. And then I just had a little gut and some blue jeans and just did the Cleveland voice. And that was Cleveland. So yeah, I think Halloween is just a chance for me to just be able to do something I can already do, but for an entire night. Like if I'm like, oh, maybe I won't be Bill Cosby, but like just find out whoever I can do an impression of and I'll just be that for Halloween. My favorite candy, I'm not a big candy guy, but if I had to choose one, it's kind of an unpopular choice usually, but Three Musketeers. Very underrated candy. People give me a lot of shit for liking that.
Peanuts, caramel, nougat, chocolate. What's not to like?
Well, it's just chocolate and nougat, Three Musketeers. Snickers is peanuts.
Oh.
And then like Milky Way is caramel.
Oh, right. Three Musketeers is the one that's all...
It's like a silver wrapper.
Like and
it's
crunchy just outside and then just like foam in the inside.
Yeah. Yeah, essentially what it is.
I can understand the criticisms.
He's like, yeah, I hate that too.
It's not bad, but
yeah, no,
I can understand. Like,
people
texturally
hate it. People really don't like that candy.
Huh.
And I'm like, it could be worse. It could be candy corn. And everyone's like,
yeah. Some people love candy corn. I don't know who, but
terrorists, that's who.
Oh.
Candy corn's fucking terrible. Ugh. It's so bad. Did you know, interesting candy fact, Tootsie Rolls, as part of the recipe for Tootsie Rolls, is to always use part of the batch that was made the day before. So every Tootsie Roll, like every new batch Tootsie Roll, has one little bit of Tootsie Roll from the first ever Tootsie Roll batch. Yeah, true story.
So it's like a sourdough?
Kind of like a yeast, like a mother. What's it called? Mother yeast? Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Like is that why they taste so bad?
I don't know, but it's definitely... I mean, if you're eating like a new, brand new bag of Tootsie Rolls, you're eating like a 1907 Tootsie Roll.
It tastes like it.
Tootsie Rolls suck.
What's your favorite costume to see people in?
Sexy insert thing here. No, I'm just kidding.
Fireman?
Sexy fireman. What's my favorite costume? I like costumes that obviously took a lot of time to make. Like, those are my favorite kind of costumes. Like, anybody can go, I'm a sexy nurse. I'm a sexy zombie. I'm a this. Or you can go buy a costume off the rack. When you see a costume that somebody, like, really put a lot of time into and made, that's when I'm like, that person should get the prize. I remember I was at a costume contest at a big, like, this big, like, 3,000-person club. And a guy won because he went as the frog. And then his wife or girlfriend was a princess. So it was Princess and the Frog.
Mm-hmm.
And then he proposed to her.
Aww.
Like, because they were finalists, because they were a couple. And they were finalists. And then they said, all right, what do you guys want to say to the voters? And then the guy got down on one knee and said, can you make this frog a prince? And they fucking won $5,000. like, holy shit. That's all you got to do? Is just, you know, marry someone? I also saw a guy once dressed as the Fawn from Pan's Labyrinth.
Ooh.
And it was like legit, like looked like a movie quality costume. Like it was impressive.
That'd be scary.
Yeah, that seems, even though he was a really nice character, very creepy looking.
Yeah. Very good movie.
Super dark.
Yeah.
Oh, Guillermo.
Are you excited for the second Pacific Rim?
You know, yes. Only because, going back to the Transformers thing, it's fucking robots fighting monsters. Like, yeah. any red-blooded man is going to want to go see that movie. And you got John Boyega in it. I'm a big fan of John Boyega. I don't think Guillermo del Toro directed this one, so I'm a little...
I think he did.
Did he?
I think so. Hmm. I'm not certain.
I don't think he did.
Oh. Huh.
I don't think... Let's find out. We have technology. I'll keep talking while I look this up. But, But no, it definitely looks a lot more fun. Not that the first one wasn't fun. The first one was very fun. But it looks a lot more like anime style than like, even though the first one was obviously very anime influenced.
Yeah.
But it definitely looks a lot like they're just like, let's go for it. Like this movie's ridiculous. It's giant robots fighting monsters and they're going to own it. Scott Eastwood. Stop trying to make him a thing.
Is that Clint Eastwood's son?
Yeah. He was in Fast and Furious. He was in the, not the newest one, but the one before that.
I couldn't place him.
He was the guy, you know how Kurt Russell plays Mr. Nobody?
Uh-huh.
He was like the guy who was like his protege. He was like trying to train.
Completely unrememberable for me.
That's why I said stop making him a thing.
Yeah. Well, I don't pay
Stephen S. DeKnight.
Oh.
I don't know who that is.
Is Guillermo del Toro involved in the production of the film?
He might be a producer, but I don't even know. John Boyega's a producer on it.
Ah.
Yep, he's a producer, Guillermo.
So he's involved, but
he was doing directed. What's that movie that just came out? That hasn't come out yet. Like it was at Sundance and did really well. The Water or something, but like the...
Oh.
What's that movie called? It's like the woman falls in love with that water creature. I don't know. He was doing that movie, so he couldn't do Pacific Rim 2.
All right. That movie we don't know the name of does look very good.
It does look good, yeah. I just can't remember what it's called.
The title's too long.
The Water, something about water.
Not The Lady in the Water.
The Look of Water? No, that was cool. M. Night. God.
Yeah.
M. Night Shyamacrap.
Ugh.
M. Night Shyamalamadigna.
He still makes movies. I don't know.
Well, have you seen... this is turning into a movie podcast. Have you seen... Split?
No.
So good.
It is?
It's very good.
It seemed... Oh, huh.
I thought it was really good. Like, I really enjoyed it. James McAvoy gives a tour de force performance.
He's a good actor.
He is a very good actor.
What are some of your favorite restaurants in Grand Rapids, and what do you like to order there?
Ooh, I do love food. I love Butcher's Union.
On Bridge Street by New Holland.
Yes, across the street from the Knickerbocker. What do I order when I get there? When I go there? The hell did I order last time I went there? I haven't been there in a while. I don't eat out a whole lot anymore. God damn it, I can't remember what we ordered. It's like,
that's Angelica Lee in the studio tonight for the listening audience.
No, I don't know. I don't remember what I had there, but I remember I've eaten there a couple of times, and every time I've eaten there, it's been very good. What else do I like? Tacos El Cunado.
Which one?
The one on, I think it's also on Bridge Street, like farther down Bridge Street.
By the, closer to John Ball Zoo.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, by the Dairy Queen.
I don't like, they have one in the downtown market too, right?
There's one in the downtown market. There's one on Burton, just east of 131. And there's one on Granville, just before it goes to Chicago Drive.
All right. Well, yeah, I haven't been to any of those.
The Burton one is my favorite. I would recommend that.
I think it's just like because it's like hole in the wall. You know what I mean? Like, I like the hole in the wall feel. You go in there, they barely speak English. You get your food, you eat outside. I remember last time I ate there, I ate with my friend Justin. We ate on the truck bed. Like, he pulled like his door down on his truck bed, and we put all the tacos, and we just stood there and ate tacos. Although a place like that is like, the food is very good, but I think the whole atmosphere adds to it. Like, you just feel like you're in an authentic feeling. Like, I like feeling authentic. I don't want to go to Mexico to eat a taco, but if I want a taco, I want to feel like I'm in Mexico at least.
Sure. Any other restaurants you really enjoy?
I don't eat out a lot. I cook for myself a lot. Like, I like to cook.
Nice.
So I tend to not go out to eat super often, but when I do, it's usually pretty good.
What is your favorite thing about performing comedy?
I don't, my favorite thing about performing comedy. Talk it out. Let's find out what my favorite thing is here. I think my favorite thing is after a show, when I get done performing and somebody comes up to me and talks to me about how, like, they needed this. Oh my God, it was such a rough week. Oh, I needed that. Oh, I needed that. Oh, thanks. You're great. I needed that. Think, if you ever want to compliment a comedian, just say, I needed that.
Huh.
And that'll really do it. Because I needed that. Because it's like, all right, I did something for them. One guy told me he almost pissed himself. that was up there. And then I had a guy actually just last week say to me, oh my God, I was crying. I'm like, oh, all right. Yeah. Just, pretty much the most, if I elicit emotion you shouldn't normally have in public, that's when I know I've done my job well.
Huh.
Oh my God, I shit myself. All right, I did good. Shit myself.
What is your favorite thing about watching comedy?
Oh man, if it's funny. That's why, when it's funny, that's like my favorite thing about watching. Like I said, I see a lot of comedy, and so sometimes I would say majority of the time I see a lot of bad comedy. So like, it's really good to see. We talk about live comedy or like just watching it on TV or
any of it, whatever. We'll separate.
I'll say live comedy, I just like seeing good comedy live. It's really hard to see good comedy unless you're going to like a comedy club. So like, when I go to like an open mic and I see like a really good comedian, and I'm like, oh my God, this person's really funny. As far as like comedy, like Netflix or like HBO specials or something like that. I don't know why I said comedy, like that's the only real form of comedy. That was a shitty move. As far as like watching comedy on television, I just like seeing like envelope pushing stuff that not everybody else is doing. Like, especially when it's a comic who's been doing it for a long time, when you see that they keep reinventing themselves when the genre changes, like people who can evolve with comedy, I think it's like something that's really good to watch. Like any comic who's just doing jokes, like if a guy's got like a Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky joke, I'm like, come on, man. But like when someone's like actually like making you think with the comedy and then also pushing the envelope, that's what I think is a good comedian. You get done with thinking, you know, you're like, oh, it's really funny, but also like, I think Louis C.K. did that to me when I watched that 2017, and said, you can tell that religion, what did he say? Oh, you can tell that Christianity won because everything after Jesus Christ is called BC or BC and AD, and I'm like, holy shit. And I'm like, because he says to him, it's obvious that Christianity is the one religion that won over all of them, because everything recorded in time is recorded as BC and AD.
That's only on the Gregorian calendar and I think the Julian calendar. There's a whole bunch of different calendars. I never knew about this. There's like a Hebrew calendar. There's like an Indian. I think India has their own calendar.
Well, now Louis C.K. just looks like an idiot to me. I just.
It was a really funny bit. I enjoyed that bit. But if you have no context outside of that, like I didn't even think about it very much until like season 2 or 3 of this podcast. Like, yeah, I stopped assuming people's calendars, and I didn't. I also stopped assuming people's currencies and various things that you take for granted every day that these people share the same unit of measure that mm-hmm. you do. Because that's pretty much all you've experienced your entire life up until then. I've only known people that use the Gregorian calendar. The people that live in China have a different calendar. Their New Year's is a different time. Like, I never even knew about it, really. Or I didn't think about it.
So what you're saying is that you personally think Louis C.K. is an idiot. That's what you're saying.
No. I think that was a very good bit. And I think for the vast majority of people, their context... Not the vast majority of people, because Americans aren't actually, we're only 300 million of 7.5 billion.
Yeah, China would be the vast majority of people.
Yeah. The vast majority of the people that I'll ever encounter in my life, and that I have up until this point, they've also only experienced the Gregorian calendar, and they don't even think about it.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think about it till right now.
Yeah.
My mind doesn't get blown very often, but... Congratulations, you blew me.
Live on air.
Live on air. This is XXX, you guys.
The Vin Diesel film? Or the second one?
With XXX, State of the Union.
The final question of the interview portion of the show.
Ooh.
If you could tell your 16-year-old self one thing, what would it be?
Take care of your knees. That's what it would be. 16-year-old me gets it. I would have had a very, very lucrative sports career if I would have taken care of my knees. I was attacked by a dog when I was in fifth grade, and it ruined my left leg. And my doctor says, whenever you do athletics, make sure you wear knee braces and all this kind of stuff and take care of yourself. But I was a kid, and I said, fuck that. And I played a bunch of sports without any kind of protection. And then by the time I graduated high school, my knees were completely wrecked. And I regret it to this day. It's probably one of my only regrets. Although my life would be completely different. I probably wouldn't even be a comedian. Like, so maybe it's, I don't know.
Maybe long-term comedy is more fulfilling.
I mean, maybe I could have done sports and then become a comedian. I mean, can you imagine starting out comedy, already being a millionaire? Just like traveling all over the country doing open mics because you don't give a shit. Because like money doesn't mean anything to you. You just take private jets to go do an open mic in fucking Oklahoma. Oh, man. I'd be the most popular comedian. Easily. There is a comedian that was in town for a little bit. He doesn't live here anymore. He lives in New York now. But he was very popular. He had a lot of resources and could drive to other open mics and never ask for gas money and stuff. And he wasn't funny. But he kept getting gigs because, you know, I'm not going to say his name. I'm really tempted to say his name.
He would not be very popular with environmentalists.
He drove a Prius.
Oh, well, there you go. He had his bases covered.
Yeah, he knew what he was doing.
There's a song I hear pretty often. One of the lyrics is, maybe all of these things made me who I am.
No, it's true.
It's kind of like, what if time isn't exactly how you perceive it? So like your future self already exists and we're just experiencing like the path to that future self.
Kind of like being on the event horizon of a black hole.
Yeah.
You could see the past, the present, and the future. That's a nerd joke. You guys.
Watch Cosmos on Netflix.
You know what I don't like? Those episodes about Cosmos that aren't about space. I fucking hate. Those always piss me off. Like, I don't care about land animals, Neil. I'm only here for that sweet, sweet space porn.
I haven't had time yet to set up a transition into the break. Normally I would add music or something, but I just haven't gotten around to it yet.